The sun is out and the moon is full. All the better to view giant vegetables and watch the barrel races at the rodeo at the Alaska State Fair, which starts tomorrow in Palmer. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. There's no better time to start the state fair than now. And today we'll be talking to some of the folks who work hard all year to make the popular annual event happen. First, let's introduce our guests. Dean Phipps is Marketing Director for the Alaska State Fair, and he's joining us by phone from Palmer. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Ellen. Thanks for having us.
Okay, welcome aboard. And our in-studio guest today is Marianne Kerr, and she is the 4-H and Youth Development Agent for the Cooperative Extension Service right here in Anchorage. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us. And for the first time, it seems to me, in years, it is not raining for the first weekend of the Alaska State Fair in Palmer, which is 12 days of fun. And every year, people get so excited about this fair, and it draws thousands and thousands of visitors. Dean, do we have an estimate of about how many people actually come to the fair every year?
Last year, we had an estimated 295,000 people plus. This year, with good weather, I think with the economy improving a little, we hope to top 300,000.
Wow. And is that monumental traffic jams for Palmer, or how does that flow?
You know, it used to be, but we've improved it a lot. We still are faced with the two-lane road from the Parks Highway coming into the fair, which is sort of a bottleneck. But we've just improved so much our ability to get people onto the fairgrounds quickly. And, you know, we have certified flaggers. We've done a lot of things to minimize that. Unfortunately, everyone gets up on a Saturday morning on a sunny day and all decide to have breakfast and come to the fair all at once. So that particular element we probably can't control.
Well, you know, the fair seems to be the one thing that people will not do without. We've had a bumpy economy last year and this year, yet you say the numbers are up. And let's go back a little bit. First of all, why are there state fairs?
Well, I think people have a desire to come together in a community, no matter how large that is, whether it be family reunion or, you know, in our case, the Matanuska Valley Fair Association was formed back in 1936, shortly after the colonists came to the valley. And they all had experienced fairs back in the Midwest, and they wanted to have that so that they could get together, have competitions like some of the first ones. They had a fair queen, believe it or not, back at the first fair. They had boxing matches. They had a lot of fun events, things that they could get together. And it was also a marketplace where people could bring things and sell eggs and sell their vegetables. And I think it was a little later that in 1941, they had the first cabbage contest, which Max Scher had won. The first prize was $35.
Whoopee.
Yeah.
It's a lot more now, isn't it?
It is. And, of course, last year we had the world record of 127 pounds. And that's no small thing. That record had stood for 19 years. Hmm. And so it was quite a big occasion.
Well, there's relatively little farming in Alaska compared to, you know, other places.
Sure.
And, but still, it's that country flavor, I think, that gets under people's skin or something, whatever it is that makes them really want to participate. It's something very old-fashioned and wholesome and, you know, down home about the fair, not to mention the food and all. But you were mentioning earlier that the Alaska State Fair in Palmer is going to be having its anniversary.
Next year is our 75th anniversary. There's some difference between the anniversary of the colonists was celebrated this year. But we actually, there was a period of time during World War II where we didn't have a fair. So we actually, our first fair was in 1936. So next year, we'll be celebrating our 75th.
75 years and still going strong and bigger and better than ever. Let's talk a little bit about the role of the animals. And of course, the animals would probably not be there without the 4-H Club. So let's bring Marianne in on the background of the 4-H's role.
4-H has been around since 1902. And I think that you've always associated, when people hear that we do 4-H, they think of cows and they think of sheep and they think of kids. And that's where they go to look for them, is at the fair. And you will find that there's many still doing that, still raising steer and still raising pigs and still raising chickens and ducks and turkeys and taking them to the fair and selling them, auctioning them off, hoping to win. They all are extremely dedicated to that project when they're doing it.
Well, we think of 4-H as something that's relegated to farming communities, but it's thriving right here in Anchorage. What do urban kids get out of 4-H?
What urban kids get out of 4-H and what all kids get out of 4-H is the whole hands-on learning. The idea of 4-H is that you find something you want to know more about, you learn by doing it, you direct your own ideas towards how you're going to incorporate this new project into your life. Do you like it? Is it fun? Can you keep going and really learn about it in depth? That's universal.
What are the 4 H's? Come on, remind us.
Oh, head, heart, hands, and health.
I should know.
But I can tell you it started out with 3 H's in the beginning, and they wanted to turn the 4th H into hustle.
Oh, no.
Way back in the early 1900s. And they did not, and health became the 4th H.
Well, that's good to know that we don't have head, heart, hands, and hustle. That was sort of terrible. I'd like to remind our listeners out there that the Hometown Alaska show is a call-in show. And if you have questions for our guests, Dean or Marianne, or anything about the fair or the 4-H, just call us up at 550-8433. 550-8433. And out there in the valley or outside of Anchorage, call 1-888-353-5752. That's 353-5752. Or shoot us an email at hometownalaska, one word, at kska.org. And remember, you can find links to our guests and both of our topic of the fair today on kska.org. That's KSKA's very own website. So the phone is already lighting up, but I'd like to maybe outline the fair's importance in our society, Dean. I know we've talked about a little bit about the amount of visitorship and the good time feel, but is there a more serious side to the fair? I mean, is it something, what is it about the fair that people just, it draws people like a magnet?
You know, I think there's a sense of ownership about the fair. You know, we did a design for a souvenir this year, a t-shirt with it said, "This is my Alaska State Fair," or you could change that to say, "This is our Alaska State Fair." And when we go too far away from that sense of community and that sense of what the fair is about, which I think is family and community and sharing that experience, they let us know. And one of the things we're doing this year is expanding into social media. And as we do that, we try to listen and let the message in rather than getting just what we think it ought to be out.
Yeah, it seems to pervade all segments of society, all ages. It is the one truly all-age event out there. I'm going to go to the phones for a moment because the board is lighting up like crazy. Theo, you are on air in Wasilla.
Hello.
Hello, Theo.
I was wondering, didn't the state fair used to be held 1 year in Palmer and then 1 year in Fairbanks? And why is it not being done that way anymore?
Dean, can you answer that?
I can't tell you the exact year, but there was some discussion quite a few years ago in the legislature about who was the exact Alaska State Fair. And at that time, they discussed rotating it to where they would all agree that they were all the Alaska State Fair, but each year they would get to officially be designated as the official state fair. But as that went on, it became, you know, as there was such a disparity between the sizes of the fair, it became less and less important. And no matter what you say, people began to think of us as the largest and the most represented of the state as far as the fair. So it wasn't something where we went in and kind of took it over. It was just sort of an agreement. We meet every year with all the other fairs, and we didn't tell Alaska State Fair in Fairbanks to suddenly call themselves Tanana State Fair. That's just something they did. It was sort of a realization of the fact.
Mm-hmm. That answer your question, Theo?
Yep.
Thanks for calling in. And I think it would be time to say there are other state fairs. There's the Tanana State Fair. There's the Southeast State Fair down in Haines. And there's a smaller state fair in Ninilchik. Are there others, Dean?
There's a rodeo that sometimes takes on a small state fair in Kodiak. I'm not sure it has an official name, but it certainly has a lot of people dedicated to it and putting it on. And for years, Golden Wheel Carnival went over for that event. So there's a Salsha Fair, a Deltana Fair that have had celebrations and festivals. So those at various times have been members of the Alaska or the Fair Association that we belong to.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, for Rendezvous at one time, we were closely with them and worked with them and cooperated.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that a little more. But I'd like to speak with Carolyn now from Anchorage. Carolyn, you're on air.
Yes, hi.
Hello.
This is a wonderful thing that people seem to think, you know, it's almost like a frozen in time. This is what used to be. The fair is not a celebration of the past. It's a celebration of the possible and the future. I think of it that way, because when you look at the 4-H, and that's the thing I wanted to talk about primarily, I was a 4-H'er, health, heart, head, and hands.
Not hustle.
and 4-H meant a lot in my family because my mom went to college on a 4-H scholarship back in 1924 through 28, I think it was, and that made the difference for her to be a teacher, which, you know, that's huge back in those times to be a college graduate. Also, it's a way of thinking and living. It's a self-sustaining.
Yes,
it is. We know what we're capable of doing. We're able to grow food and or we're able to put away food through canning and so forth. And I used to really enjoy, I mean, the blue ribbons were nice, but the $2.50 I got for each blue ribbon on anything I had canned and put in the fair, that made the difference. You know, that to me was the motivation right there. And I encourage people to purchase, you know, get four families together maybe and purchase a cow or a hog or whatever, because when those things are auctioned off, you know, the kids that raise them, not just 4-H'ers, it used to be 4-H and FFA, I don't know if that's still the case, but you know everything that's gone into that animal's mouth. You know the health of the animal, and you get a quarter of the cow cut, wrapped, and you know, proportioned out. Everybody gets a quarter of all the different cuts, and it is one of the best ways to have a safe food supply. And again, we're able to, through not just 4-H changing, but all of the emphasis changing on it being community gardens and the heart of the cities and so forth. People should understand if somebody can sow a dress, you can sow a dress.
Well, Carolyn, this is very topical because we are in a time when people are very interested in growing their own. So, Marianne, maybe you could give us a little more about that.
I can also tell you that those tickets for those sides of beef and the other animals that are being auctioned are available in the 4-H building at the fair. Just ask one of the 4-H people who are hosting, and I'm sure they can help you. What Cooperative Extension does, however, is have a whole program of horticulture. Then I work with horticulturists, and we encourage community gardens. We encourage urban gardening, we call it. And we also, as you know, the 4-H person, I encourage people to keep their kids right alongside them and make sure that they are learning by doing also.
All right, and especially those adorable little bunnies and chickens and things that the kids bring in. I don't think I could eat one of those.
There's a whole way that you have to learn how to show those, too. That's another exciting thing that no one is aware of, how to show a rabbit. It's very intricate. And chickens, I'm not sure, but I know that it's intricate also.
No kidding. How do you show a rabbit?
You have to be able to turn it and hold it and show the feet and show the ears and do all those kinds of interesting things.
The art of showing rabbits.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Carolyn, any other comments? I've got another call waiting.
Well, the one thing I would say is it's tough for a child to raise an animal and then to see it go to the end that animals are supposed to go to. There are a lot of people that don't agree with that. But at the same time, if we're going to eat meat, somebody is going to take care of that for us. If we're going to eat vegetables, somebody's going to grow them. So why not us?
You know, many of the kids who are raising animals know that they are not going to be pets. They know that those animals are going to be sold for food. There are some who cannot bear to part with them, and believe me, their parents know from the very beginning that this is going to be a pet that we're going to keep. But many of them do know that the return is selling the animal and having it become food.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the economy.
To not just focus on that, though, I do think that one of the great things about the fair, it demonstrates our capabilities. These are not antique skills. These are skills that are operated and used effectively today for all of us because, being able to take care of yourself from sowing we used to go in and to the feed sack, into the feed store, and pick out the flower, the pattern that we wanted on the feed sack because that was going to be our dress. Or whatever. And we have a better choice of cotton these days, but nonetheless, the whole concept is being self-sufficient. And I think people are warming to that concept.
Absolutely.
That's a great point. That's a great point to make. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your comments. And I would like to remind our listeners that Hometown Alaska is a call-in program. So if you have questions or comments for our guests, call 550-8433. 550-8433 in Anchorage or outside of Anchorage, out in the valley there, 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. Or send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, you can find links to today's topic of the Alaska State Fair in Palmer and the 4-H right here on KSKA.org, KSKA's own website. So, Dean, are you still out there?
I am.
I wanted to talk a little bit while we're on the 4-H and the Exhibiting Rabbits theme. We have the farm exhibit highlights for this year. And there's a poultry and rabbit exhibit on Tuesday, the 24th. Oh, that was yesterday. Huh. And then we have the dairy goat show. We have the swine, sheep, and goat showmanship and confirmation. Tell us a little bit about some of the farm exhibits.
Well, farm exhibits has become an area that, other than just going by and seeing animals exhibited, it's where a lot of the competitions take place. And we also have an area where you can watch chickens hatch, little chicks hatch from the eggs, and we have a webcam set up there. That's linked to our website, or it will be before the fair opens. Everybody knows about the petting zoo. What most people don't know is that's run by a local 4-H group as a fundraising project. It was taken on by them under the supervision of one of our board members, Carol Kenley, years ago when the petting zoo that we had that traveled up here from outside decided not to come up here. And it was so popular, and we wanted to continue having it. So it was started as a 4-H project, and 4-H provides the liability insurance and the things. And so that's been a good partnership.
Mm-hmm. And there's a petting zoo every day, noon to 8, for the little ones.
Yes, it is. And that whole area is it's just, one of the places you need to go. I was just talking with our farm exhibits manager, Jana, and she said, we usually have a sow pig that gives birth during the fair. We don't have one as yet, but we have a potbelly pig that had just given birth and little tiny little piglets that are going to be there. And that's kind of special to my heart because I was part of a crew that actually was chasing a getaway potbelly pig one year, and it ran right up my front, and I found out what it meant to be marked by a potbelly pig.
An experience.
But you never know what's going to happen here. But that area is certainly an area that almost everybody who comes to the fair visits, if not to see the giant vegetables, the animals, and especially with the children. And we do have educational, a Science in You and Barnyard Safari, where actually, second and third graders and fourth and fifth and sixth graders come on school field trips and visit that area and also our recycling area as well.
Well, it's a fascinating place. Let's take another call. Laura, you're on air from Palmer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a quick comment to everyone coming out from Anchorage and maybe even Wasilla. I live directly on the route to the fair, and we are routinely denied access out of our property by people who maybe think we're taking a shortcut to the fair. We get a lot of honking late at night. We get people urinating in our driveway and into our woods. And I just kind of wanted to say, I love the fair. I support them. I mean, it's a great draw for Palmer. But people need to respect the private property of people around the fair because it makes us not love the fair as much as we really, really want to. So that's my comment. I'm glad for the fair. I've loved the fair. I've worked at the fair. I've lived at the fair. But
you want people to be good neighbors.
Yeah.
Respect.
Because,
yeah.
You know, we put up with 10 days of constant traffic. We just want to be able to get out to go to the grocery store. So, and maybe, possibly not find people urinating in our woods. That would be a plus.
We'll remember to remind people of that. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Let's take another.
Go ahead, Pete. I appreciate that comment because it's something that we want to be aware of. One of the things that makes a great fair is that we're a mirror of our community. But the problem with that is that you're a mirror of everything that exists in your community. But we'd like to know if there's that kind of issue. We have a pretty professional parking and security crew, and they even actually have video cameras in some key locations that they monitor activity. And so if we're made aware of a particular problem in a certain area, that's something I would like the opportunity to follow up on and invite to contact me at the fair, and I would do that.
Okay. Let's take a call from Laura in Anchorage. You're on air, Laura.
Hi, yes. I had a question for the state fair person that's on. I have a lot of friends and family who were vendors for a long time, for somewhere around 15 years, and then eventually found the fees to be able to participate way too oppressive and taking too big of a chunk out of their profit that they were making at the fair. And so I guess I'd want him to respond to kind of the justification for hiking up the fees every year and how you think that it negatively or positively affects the fair as far as letting truly local vendors be participants.
Well, there are several issues, I think, involved in that. Unfortunately, all of our fees are going up. My electric bill, all the expenses of operating the fair and everything else, for that matter, is increasing. One of the things that took place on the fairgrounds, many fairs have percentage agreements with their vendors, particularly food vendors. And probably because it's our number one attraction, food are one of the most profitable areas to be a vendor at the fair. And there's the same kind of competition for that as there might be for set net fishing, as far as that goes. Back when we had a number of vendors form an association, and there was a decision that not to go in percentage and to have an increase take place in a flat rate. And there was a motion passed at that time by the Vendors Association and also by the board that whatever increases took place had to be across the board and be extended to all vendors. And so that, unfortunately, put us in a situation where we couldn't discriminate one vendor against the other. And that's kind of unfortunate in some way because we have vendors that make money and have very profitable booths, and we have other vendors that are probably, I think the last time I counted, there were about 65 nonprofits that do some sort of fundraising activity at the fair, everything from the rat race to the hockey puck shoot. And many of those are, we try to give a better rate to them, but we're kind of caught in that dilemma of trying to be fair and represent everyone. And that's something we probably should look at to see if there's a difference in the level of opportunity. Ordinarily, you would do that through percentage or through some differentiation, but there hasn't been support from that overall from the vendors. So that's probably something that maybe we would look at and see if there's a way for us to do that more equitably.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, Laura.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really, I have tons of fun at the fair. I love going to the fair. I worked at the fair for several years, but it's really kind of important, whatever you're doing, to pay attention to who's here and who's not here, and to, you know, take a look at maybe some of the smaller fairs that have lower fees and therefore have a more representative group of who's able to be out there with their local products and things like that.
It's a good point, and I think that we have some of the same problems that small cities do. There's the demand for services. People want, why can't you pave that? The dust is too great. All of the things that people expect, and particularly as we grow. And we are a nonprofit. We don't get money from the state like some fairs do in other areas. So we basically have to support ourselves and have for years, other than maybe a capital improvement here and there from the state. So it's a big dilemma for us, but I think we want to be fair, no pun intended, but we need to look at that and make sure that, you know, I mentioned before about letting the message in. So when I hear things like that, I don't consider them something to be refuted or, you know, something I would present an argument against. I listen to that and try to pass that along to people that can maybe come up with a more equitable way of doing that and allowing people to attend. We do have some things. We have a commitment lately to do more things that are free with fair admission, so that when you come to the fair and you do purchase a ticket, there are a lot of activities on the fairgrounds that you can do and create without that. We have several free shows at the Borealis this year, free general admission, and so we have a commitment to that. But you know, we are a mirror of the community, and we have to sort of provide a little bit of this and a little bit of that people want. And it's not perfect, but we do listen, and we do appreciate the comment.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Laura. That was a good one. Dean, I understand that the Alaska State Fair in Palmer is a nonprofit. Can you tell me how that works?
We're actually a 501c3 nonprofit association. We have a board of governors, governance, and those are elected at an annual meeting with membership, which can vary anywhere from 400 to 700, depending on issues that are taking place. We are always interested in having more members. You know, a simple membership, I believe, is $25, entitles you to membership and voting rights, and also an invitation for you and a guest to the annual board reception, which is held here on the fairgrounds. And it's probably, at the present time, one of the best deals around. If you're a fair member, you get an invitation to the fair, which includes admission to the fair for two, plus parking, complimentary parking. And the board reception is one of the most beautiful spots on the fairgrounds, the Eckert Gardens, which is a beautiful area. And so not only can you be a member, can you voice your opinion, can you be heard and helped elect who we have as representatives on the board, but you also get to come to the fair. And we have beautiful food, and we actually present the Farmer of the Year, Farm Family of the Year, mm-hmm. at that event as well.
Right. Well, I thought that would be maybe how someone such as our previous caller could get a suggestion in or make a change to what is done at the fair by becoming a member and going through the board members. Would that be correct assessment?
It's one way. It's one way if you want to enter into that process. But just as a staff member at the fair, I can tell you that any comment that we receive through the fair website, we're required to not only to address that, but to respond to it. And we keep a copy of that in a reading file here. And those are all reviewed by the fair manager, and he shares those that he feels are important to with the board as well. So there isn't any that's overlooked. And we have an even more immediate process now with the 10,000 plus fans we have on Facebook, and there are conversations going on there all the time about many of the things that were brought up today, and we try to respond to those as quickly as we can, usually within a couple days or sooner. And you know, this conversation is taking place out there in social media, and the question is, do you want to be a part of it? So a lot of times we'll have other fairgoers that'll chip in and say, well, wait a minute, that's not fair. How much did you pay for a half gallon of milk back in 1952, you know?
Right, right.
And so that's the most interesting change to me at the fair.
I think we want to touch on some of the more technological advances at the fair, as well as some of the really heartwarming traditional events, such as the giant cabbage way off and that kind of thing. But I think we want to take a short break now while we reconnoiter. I want to come back and talk about the music at the fair, too. That's a big draw. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the show repeats tonight at 10. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking phone calls. following this afternoon's broadcast, you can also find a copy of today's Hometown Alaska online at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Hi, welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and today our topic is the Alaska State Fair, which opens tomorrow in Palmer, just about noon. My guests today are Dean Phipps, and he's the marketing director out there in Palmer, and Marianne Kerr, and she is with the 4-H, and youth development agency in Anchorage. So our last caller brought up some questions about accessing, you know, fair organizers with suggestions and ideas that things could be done different or better. And Dean, you mentioned the fair is now on Facebook. Let's tell us about that, and then we'll talk about the iPhone too.
we a lot of people are on Facebook or are utilizing social media in some form, and we brought in some help and a company that we thought would really get us going in the right direction. And we didn't want to do it unless we could do it right. And I think when we started, we found out we had a Facebook page that wasn't really legal. So we had to restructure that. And that was the first good thing we learned. And then we had about 2,000 fans then. We transferred some of them over. And just this last week, we went over the 10,000 mark. And it's a very vibrant conversation that's going on in Facebook. We have a lot of people. We found out that we have a lot of loyal followers, both on Twitter and Facebook. We also have people that don't hesitate to share their concerns or their suggestions with us. And there's a whole conversation that takes place on almost every comment that has any meaning. So, you know, and we're looking to improve. I mean, we have an iPhone app through eTix this year that if you download the free app, you can actually purchase your concert or event tickets or fair tickets and download the ticket to your iPhone. And you just scan in right off of your iPhone at the gate or as the entrance to the concert. And it just has a barcode on there that's two parts, and it's just amazing.
Let's get back to some of the nuts and bolts. The fair does open tomorrow, August 26th, at noon?
At noon. And, the big change in the fair hours are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are now weekend days, and that's primarily, I think, because with the early school start, Friday has become a day that maybe people take off as soon as school's out and come to the fair and enjoy the evening, and it's a bigger day, and so consequently we have more traffic, more garbage, more things to provide. So that's a weekend day now, and the weekdays Monday through Thursday, and Labor Day we open at noon, and the vendors seem to love that because they have a little more time to regroup and maybe get some rest, and then on Saturday and Sunday and Labor Day, we start earlier so everybody can get out here and spend the whole day.
Okay, and it runs through September 6th. That's 12 full days. And people can find all the information, first of all, on kska.org, because our own KSKA website has links to the Alaska State Fair and to the 4-H in Anchorage. And I just want to know, people can actually book tickets to the fair on the Internet. Is that true?
That's true.
Save a dollar, too, right?
But you got to do it before midnight tonight.
Oh.
You can go online. There's a buy ticket nav bar and a big thing if you can't miss it says buy tickets. And when you go there, it's pretty easy to select out which ticket you want. And my recommendation is the six-pack of daily fare admissions, which, unlike previous offers that we had, you can divide those tickets up and they're good any day of the fair. So if you buy a six-pack, you and your husband could use one. You could pass them out to kids. They could take a friend from the neighborhood. And they're available for $60 for adults and $30 for youth or senior.
How about parking? An earlier caller mentioned parking jams, but I have never really gotten involved in a big jam when I've gone out there.
I've worked here for a long time, and there used to be a problem, particularly on weekend days or on particular days. We've really done a lot to minimize that, particularly in the things within our control, which are getting people onto the grounds and off the grounds more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple of years, we haven't had the problems. We haven't had as many complaints. There's always individual circumstances. For example, when we have fireworks on Friday night and everyone decides to leave at the same time, that's unavoidable. Doesn't matter what you have in place. But I think we have a good system for doing that. Parking is, the fees for parking are reasonable compared to others. I think there's $5. And some people, that's for car, and some people like to remember when we didn't charge for parking. But one of the reasons that we do charge for parking is we've had pressure to improve the traffic. So we have certified flaggers at key intersections. And that's probably, in my opinion, has done more about keeping traffic moving. When you have an intersection where you have four or five lanes coming together at one time, it can very easily just stop. And it doesn't have to stop very long before cars are backed up. So certified flaggers are actually union, most of them, and so those are people that we have to pay handsomely, but they deliver the goods. They really keep the traffic moving, and they're very professional. So, we also have lighted parking lots. We've had portable lighting units that we've moved out, and we're buying more every year. And we have had paved areas that go in all the way to Raven Hall now and come through the red lot. So there's a demand for services. We spend at least two-thirds, probably more like three-fourths of the revenue that we take in for parking goes for expenses directly related to managing those cars coming in and parking them and all the services that relate to that.
How about public transportation to the fair? Is there any setup with both bus lines or the railroad? The railroad goes right through there, too.
We do have what's called a fair train, and many times that's based on availability of the equipment. It's been doing very well. This year, we have trains coming out here on the main days, and on the most popular days, like on the weekend, they have two trains that they come out here, one in the morning and then one later in the day that can come back in the evening. And that's very popular. And then you may have heard about the Valley Movers, the folks in the Valley here that bought up a bunch of buses.
Yeah.
And they are offering a bus service from Anchorage to the fair. And we have a link on our website that goes to their website where you can find out information about that. But I think they've got some good things involved there where there's an advantage to children, ride for less or free, depending on their age. And so it seems quite reasonable compared to some of the things that were offered in the past.
And again, listeners, you can find links to today's show on KSKA.org. Just check out KSKA.org, our own website here, and you'll find links to the fair, to the 4-H Club, and for any pertinent information you might need for getting to the fair and enjoying yourself at the fair. So, if you'd like to call in and listen and ask a question or give a comment to either of our guests, call 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or outside of Anchorage, out there in the valley, 1-888-353-5752. That's 353-5752. Or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. So let's get back to some of the exhibits and the special days. What about the giant cabbages?
Well, it's probably one of our, the giant cabbage contest reminds me of when they have the heavy equipment auction and everybody goes around and kicks the tires. I mean, you have these people who circle the arena over there, and they're all, as each cabbage is brought in, they all are trying to estimate, which one's going to be the winner. And interesting thing that I learned last year, and I've been at this a while, but I learned that cabbages actually lose weight from the time they're cut and the time that they're brought in through dehydration as they begin to lose water through evaporation and through that process. And so a lot of the growers will bring them in late in the day maybe when it's cooler, and they'll bring them in, and they want to get them weighed as quickly as possible so that they don't lose weight. And, of course, you know, that's a big thing because last year we had the world record, you know. And that world record stood for 19 years, so it wasn't a small event.
Wow, that's definitely a public draw. And I wanted to talk a little bit again about the role of the 4-H. Marianne, how do children pick their project, especially urban children? Let's talk about them a minute.
You know, urban children who participate in 4-H, many of them do it through their school. Mm-hmm. And we do a number of things in the school, after school, and through a specialized group. We do have a shooting sports group. We have one of our 4-H clubs is going to perform at the fair. It's the Taiko Drummers. They're a 4-H club.
I didn't know that.
They will be there, I believe, on Labor Day. It's a matter of what is it that they want to do. There are so many things to choose from. After school, there's sports, there's just about any club you could imagine. 4-H tends to become something that adds more to what they're doing or becomes part of what they're doing. And that's a special way of urban populations because, especially in Anchorage, we have so many people that are working that feel that they cannot volunteer to start a club, they cannot volunteer to help with just about any part of it. So they appreciate being able to participate through school, through a program that they're already involved in.
Are there any programs where, say, a city kid could share with a country kid, you know, a child who lives out in Palmer who might have room to grow a pig?
It's not difficult. We can do it. It would just be a matter of, you know, a family working as a family to take their children out there to work with another family. We've had kids who have raised animals in the valley, but they're part of Anchorage. It just takes an effort. It's a family activity.
I think we talked a little bit earlier about the role of the 4-H in helping a child follow through from, say, seed to sprouted vegetable, from baby chick to big chicken, to see a project all the way through. What's the value of that for life?
The value of that is that you learn how to set goals, you learn how to be self-directed, you learn how to follow a pattern and set yourself a plan to follow, and you keep with it and you understand the aspects of it. And we may ask you to talk about it. So you may learn to be a public speaker. You may learn to stand up and teach other people how to grow that seed. So it's a multifaceted idea. And 4-H itself nationwide is more or less morphing into more educational opportunities in, science, for one thing. Growing and raising animals, that's science. And 4-H is dedicated to making sure that science is very important.
And math. We just learned about the ephemeral nature of the weight of the giant cabbage. We're just a few degrees
great,
drop in temperature.
Great science experiment. You could try that out. Weigh it at home. Weigh it when you get there. You can figure it out that way.
Yeah, temperature. Let's go to the phones. Bill from Palmer, you're on air.
Hi, Dean. Just a side comment. The first fair I went to was located where the Pioneers' home is, and the parking lot was where the visitor center is, and we even had a racetrack there. But so we didn't have a parking problem. But the question,
yes,
I guess, for Dean is the parking situation, a quick one, and admittance. Now, I understand the reason we get a stamp on our hand is so we can come back in again.
That's
is
correct.
That why we do that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, school going on now, and I remember when I was working the college booth out of there, people would come and go, and I need to go pick up my kids at school now that school's on, but when I come back, I could pay for parking again, is that right?
No, sir. I've got some good information for you, and I wish I could, you know, implant that in everybody's brain, because if you come in from the north side towards Palmer of the fair at the Purple Gate, and you drive in there, and there's signs there directing you to go to the right and come along the service road, which parallels the Glen Highway and the railroad, takes you to the Green Gate, and you can drop off or pick up people there. There's a temporary parking area, and then you can pull out onto the Glen Highway, and you do not have to pay for parking to access that area. It's the design to pick up and drop off.
Yeah, I understand that one, but I go get my kids so they can be with me at the fair for the evening. There's no, I can't leave my car there, though, right?
You can't leave your car there? That's correct.
I mean, I have to pay another fee to come back into the parking lot if I'm going to stay for the evening.
You know, that's something that I did hear discussion about that. I can't really answer, but I do know that they did discuss that as a problem where you pay once and whether or not that would grant you access for the day.
A pedestrian going in, you pay once and can be able to come back. But like
right.
the school gets out, I run to the school to get my kids, and we're going to spend the evening at the fair. In the past, anyway, I had to pay another parking fee even though I just left the lot. But you say you're talking about that.
We're not only we may have done something about it. I don't have a definitive answer, but that's something that I will check on. And if I've got some encouraging news, if you'll put a comment on our website, I will make sure to get that to you.
Okay, thank you for calling, Bill. That's another good point to make. A lot of cars out there, so maybe people could pool up or maybe arrange for one person to go in and out and pick up kids. There's a lot of ways you can come up with to deal with that problem. So let's talk a little bit more about the special features, and I'm really interested in the music. It looks like we've got everything this year from bluegrass to, well, not quite Bach, but boys to men. We've got a little bit of Ricky Skaggs, Kenny Rogers, Lone Star for all the bluegrass and country fans out there. We have plenty of rock and roll, and I cannot tell you everyone who's playing. There's bands that called Static Cycle, Collective Soul, 38 Special, Hinder, and plenty of local music, too. I think the fair provides a wonderful platform for many of our local musicians and virtuosos, dancers, the taiko drummers, for instance.
Exactly. And that's a commitment that's carried on. I think it was established, you know, years ago, and we've continued to do that to give people an opportunity to do that. The main stage seems to be growing every year, and, you know, so far the most popular group has been Shinedown, which is a rock and roll group on the second Friday. But also, Collective Soul is on the first Friday of the fair. And because that happens to be Kids' Day, where 12 and under get in free, and there's fireworks that night, there's been a lot of people for that show. I think they're probably in the same category of attraction as Hinder, maybe, the night before an opening day. But I think because there's fireworks that night and there's 12 and under get in free, there's a lot of people that are making. Friday has become a big night at the fair. It's mm-hmm. a good night to go.
And you had mentioned Kids Day. Tell us about that.
Well, it's sponsored by MTA, and they help us to offer and a reduced price at the gate. So 12 and under go free that day. And there's a lot of activities for kids. That's the first event I coordinated years ago when I started at the fair. And sack races and straw scramble and egg and a spoon carry and all of those type of things that are just fun, you know, pie eating contests. So there's a lot of things that go on for kids that day. We've been encouraging the school district to have in-service days during the fair so that there would be opportunities for kids to come to the fair without missing school on weekdays. And Mat-Su School District actually did that on the second Friday of the fair. There's no school that day.
Wow. So there.
And we're hoping that Anchorage will do the same thing next year, because right now their schedule has them starting school on August 13th.
So let's
August 18th?
It was
August 18th.
August 18th?
For the kids, yes.
Yeah.
And I also would like
on the calendar next year, I believe it's even earlier.
Okay. I would like to invite all of those kids who are coming on Kids Day who have a relative in the military to come by the 4-H building, where you'll be able to make something very special that's personalized by you that you can then send to your deployed loved one.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea.
It'll be there.
Let's make sure people know Kids Day is Friday, August 27th. That's the day after tomorrow. And, of course, doors open at 10. And kids under 12 and under are free, right? All day.
Yes.
Why it's Kids Day. Okay.
That's
and
right.
Stop by the 4-H booth and take Marianne up on her offer. We also have a family day, and that's this coming Saturday, August 28th. And we have a wild salmon day. And if you're a wild salmon, maybe you get in free?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know any wild salmon. They don't last too long around my house. They're too good.
How about Two Buck Thursday?
That's Two Buck Thursday is one of, you know, it's one of the, from 12 to 2 o'clock on opening day, at Fair Gates only, it's $2 for admission.
Say those hours again, 12 to?
12 to 2 on opening day. We open it. We open at 12, so for the first 2 hours of the fair, there's $2 admission. And so once you're in, you can go and enjoy the fair. You can stay until we close. And, you know, I shouldn't share this, but a lot of locals have figured it out, and I suppose they'll continue to, they'll come in and eat lunch and stay for a while, and maybe they have to go back to work along lunch, and they'll, so you get their hands stamped, and you'll see them back there again that night.
Well, that's all right. They still got in on their $2.
Yeah, you bet.
That's
and
okay.
And then maybe I can check on Bill's problem with parking, too, and see if that can, you know, I'm not sure what the situation is on that, but I know we have discussed it in the past as a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there will always be wrinkles that need to be worked out. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the headliner acts. I guess Howie Mandel is coming. Now, I've always thought of him as a stand-up comic.
Well, you know, that's really the show that he's putting on here. People have begun to get to know him on TV as a host and as a judge in America's Got Talent. But Howie Mandel is a great stand-up comic, and I had a friend who saw him in Vegas, and she saw him and Elton John, and she said that Howie Mandel was the great show, that she really enjoyed that. And so I think he's sort of a sleeper. You know, if you get past the fact that you can see him on TV, what you see here in his show here will be very funny, and I think he's going to be very good at relating to Alaskans and being topical and talking back and forth and about things that we understand.
Well, Alaska is certainly on the national stage a lot these days, usually in a political context, but I think this would give some national figures at the fair, food for thought, no pun intended again, you know, that there is a whole other side to Alaska, which is very heartfelt and homespun and sort of a little old-fashioned and high-tech at the same time. How about the contest? We talked a little bit already about the giant cabbage, but we have also the chili fiesta. We have the backhoe rodeo, and that's coming up on September 6th. Tell us about that one.
Well, you know, we have that in a real central area of the fairgrounds. You know, we have two front-end loaders and backhoes set up in the middle of the Pebble Corral this year, and they've devised games of skills where they have to pick up eggs and just spot them in a circle, and then they're all timed events. And boy, you see some operators. They're very, very skilled, and you would sort of expect that because there's so much construction goes on up here in Alaska. But they all show up, and they all watch each other, and they all nod and comment. You'd think you were watching a horse pull or some kind of horseshoe pitch or something like that. Everyone's watching, you know, and so that's the backhoe rodeo. The chili, the most favorite part of the chili, I think, the contestants enjoy competing, but the public, somehow they all show up at tasting time. And you get a cup and you go around, and for as long as it lasts, you get to sample each of those chilies, and they're very, very good. It's a lot of fun, you know,
to do that. A spam championship, too, while we're on the subject of food. And a pie contest, the Alaska-grown pie contest. There's every imaginable kind of contest for the contest-minded. A fiddle contest, there's an Alaska's Got Talent qualifying round. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's something that we're cooperating with the smaller fairs around Alaska and Tanana. They have talent competitions in their areas, and I think Tanana had as many as 60 contestants in theirs. And so the winners of theirs will get to come here and compete in ours. We'll also have preliminaries on ours, and all that information is on the website under contest. Just click up on the top, and then all of those from the winners from our fair and the winners from the other fairs will compete in a final. And I believe there's quite a significant cash prize for that, too. $5,000 for first place.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. So I'd like to remind our listeners, if you have any last-minute calls, 550-8433, 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 in the Valley or outside of the Anchorage. Or you can shoot us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember that links to today's show and to today's guests and the Alaska State Fair, the 4-H, can be found right here on kska.org. That's KSKA's very own website. Well, time is growing short. It's been a great hour. There's so much more to talk about. It's like just too much. There's the quilt, and there is the quilting and the honey, the homemade honey, and the
quilt show is wonderful.
Oh, I love the quilt show.
Is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, Ellen, that is something you really don't want to miss. It's just a very delightful 20 minutes that you can spend.
Oh, everything's delightful, and we have. I personally like the fuzzy bunnies and the little goats, the baby animals, and the bees. I used to raise some honey myself, and they have the bee exhibit. You can watch the little bees through the glass hive. They have the glass walls on the hive, so you can actually see the bees at work. I mean, it's a hugely instructional. In a scientific way.
It is. And you can actually do it as a 4-H project if
you
wanted to. Sure.
You could raise bees?
Sure.
Some mothers might not like that, but the honey is sure good. And Dean, have you got any final comments for us about the fair, urging people to come this year?
Well, you know, our theme this year is Imagine If. And, you know, one of the things we had a contest trying to imagine, you know, imagine if my favorite was imagine if you could remember where you parked your car. Because that's sometimes a problem. You go in and you're all around the room, and, you know, it's like, you know, it's one thing to remember which gate you came in, but then also where you parked your car. There's a big parking lot out there. So,
well, aren't they color coordinated or something?
They are. They're color coordinated, and the walkways are color coordinated too. So if you can remember which color you came in on, then you certainly have a better chance of getting back to where you came in.
Well, I've never lost my car at the fair. I always memorize the row, and whether it's next to a red truck or a blue van, that kind of thing. Marianne, how about you? Anything you'd like to say?
Oh, I would just like to say that I hope people come by and visit us at the State Fair, and the 4-H Building Cooperative Extension will be there also. For those of you that want to get more information on raising your own crops or canning your own food, we've got the information there, and it's free of charge.
Yeah, we like that word, free of charge.
Yes.
And there's everything. There's something for everybody. And some of it is free. And if you get there on the special days, the Kids' Day, as Dean has mentioned, you can get in for $2 between 12 and 2. And it's
Well, that's not Kids' Day, actually. The Kids' Day is 12 and
special,
under. And
that was
12 to
sorry.
2 is on opening day.
That was the...
Tomorrow,
the $2 right. Thursday, right?
Yes, $2 Thursday.
$2 Thursday. And I think there's so much, the rides, the food, the shoe boxes full of fried zucchini and French fries and the big turkey legs and you know, a lot
everything
of people.
Everything you wait for all year long.
Yeah, you can have it one day, you can have it. So join us next week when Hometown Alaska looks at some of the epidemics that swept through Alaska with Charles Woolforth. And you've been listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.